Surprise, it's me. But I am excited to get to share with you guys today. We are just kicking off our sermon series, Jesus Is. So you see all the lovely lights behind me, and you may have saw the really cool branches. Let's give it up for our team. I know like Dustin, my sister, and Danny engineered all of this. It's fantastic. So let's give it up for them. Getting into it now, really quick, I want to give you guys, like, kind of go into teacher mode, and I want you guys to do a quick fill-in-the-blank quiz, and it will be great. I'm just kidding. So before you hyperventilate and freak out, it's really, really quick, and there's not going to be that much involved. You don't need to write anything down, but what I do want you to do is I want you to fill in the blank. I want you to do that by turning to the person next to you, and when I say the question, and then you're going to fill in the blank. It's not really questions, like blah, 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 blank. Fill in the blank by turning to the person next to you and answering. So this really quick is really simple. Jesus is, turn to the person next to you. Just whatever pops in your mind, go ahead and say it. Don't be shy. Okay, nice. Okay, so chances are we all had various, I heard King of Kings over here, which is really cool. Some of you might have said, you know, the Son of God. Some of you might have been like, he was a really great teacher long ago, about 2,000 years ago. He was a great man. He did a lot of good things. Maybe you didn't even want to look at the person next to you and say, you know what, I don't really know much about him. Or maybe I've heard good things. Maybe I've heard bad things. I don't know. Whatever your reaction was. But chances are that when you hear that, you had some sort of reaction. There was something that came to mind. And if you didn't really, maybe it all was like, I don't really know. Like, that's still a reaction. So today, kicking off the new sermon series, Jesus Is, we're going to be grappling with this question and hopefully challenging your current view. And regardless of if this is really, really new for you or if your first words were Jesus when you grew up, like your parents were really crazy, I don't know, and you came out saying Jesus, like if that's what it was for you, I believe that this series is going to really, really challenge you and in a new way, because the thing is that this question is ever evolving, and it's really, really important, because even as you're further along in your life with Christ, this is still changing and this is still shifting as you get to experience him in a different way in your relationship with him. So the first thing that we're going to focus on this week is the idea of Jesus is your friend. And I'm really excited to get to share this, because I feel like I can totally relate with this. I grew up in the church. I was really, really young when I accepted Christ. And it was kind of at that point that I began to start out my walk with him. Like, it became less about going to Sunday school and, you know, my parents are forcing me to come or things like that. And all of a sudden, I encountered a real live being that wanted to invade my life with his presence. And it would be little things, like the ways that he would show me that he was my friend. Something that I could understand as an 8-year-old or 9-year-old, 10-year-old, just starting off in life would be little things like, God, I can't find my Barbie doll shoe. I promise you this is like legit happened. I could not find my Barbie doll shoe, and I was so upset because it was my favorite pink one, and I could still remember how frustrated. I just knew it had the heels, the spiky heels. It was gorgeous, and I just knew like my mom was going to run it over the vacuum cleaner like she's getting ready to vacuum that day, and I was so upset. I just remember, you know what, I'm just going to try and pray about it. So I prayed, like, God, please help me find my Barbie doll shoe. And I promise you, I walked back into my room. I had scored that thing, and flat in the middle of the room on the floor, like there's no way I could have missed that, there was a Barbie shoe. And do what you want with that, but for me, that was like, wow. Number one, he really cares about the smallest things. Looking back, I'm like, that was pretty small. But to me, that was big, and he wanted to invade my life in such a real and personal way. And so I know that he wants to do the same for you, and so we're going to really, really talk about this. See, our view of God, it's often based on our human experiences and interactions. So we kind of get this model of who God is. Like, we learn about it in the Bible, but our human experiences and interactions with other people kind of can distort this and change this. So on a cognitive level, we may understand that what the Bible teaches us about who he is, but this understanding is limited by our experience and our unique lens through which all of our understanding is filtered. So for example, you may be here today and you may understand, yeah, we sing about how God is a loving father and God is love and experiencing him in that way. But you may have had abusive parents, maybe physically or emotionally, or some kind of abusive relationship that tells you, you know, I don't really know what that looks like. Maybe you don't even know what a loving father looks like. So that's going to kind of create the situation for you, like where your understanding may be flawed. Maybe you grew up and you understand that God gives grace freely and that he's going to accept you when you make mistakes and when you fall and you're down. But maybe when you made a mistake as a child, I know parents, I'm hiding right now too. But maybe when you made a mistake, you didn't receive grace. Like maybe it was more like, well, you should have thought about that. I've been there too, mom, so give yourselves a break. But we mean well, but this may have been your experience. And so coming to God and understanding him as a God of grace might be hard. We might have a hard time understanding that. And we might behave in ways and respond to God in ways that he never intended because of this distorted view or these experiences. We may learn to hide our mistakes, to close them off and to shield them from the light instead of bringing them out and showing them and bringing them to the light so that they can be healed. And this is where we love, because we don't really understand God's love. And we don't really have a model, like even on the best human on earth. Maybe you had the most fantastic parents and interactions and everything and it was beautiful, but even that cannot compare to the kind of love that God has for you and me. So we have a hard time just humanly just understanding what pure love looks like. I want to take you to a really cool story in the Bible. I grew up learning about this, and some of you guys are going to laugh because this is about the short man in the Bible, okay? And you know my husband's short. I'm short, so I like the short man, okay? I'm just going to say that, put that out there. So he's not here, so honey, I'm thinking of you. And yeah, so we're going to talk about it. And if he was here today, he'd be like making jokes and stuff. But I'm not as funny as him, so you'll have to bear with me. Luke 19, 1 through 10 tells a really beautiful story that I feel illustrates how Jesus is our friend. So it goes like this. Jesus entered Jericho and made his way through the town. There was a man there named Zacchaeus. He was the chief tax collector in the region, and he became very rich. He tried to get a look at Jesus, but he was too short to see over the crowd. Anyone been there? That's me. You're like standing, you're at a concert or something, and somebody right in front of you. It's so frustrating. Okay, just had to rant. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree beside the road, for Jesus was going to pass that way. And when Jesus came by, he looked up at Zacchaeus and called him by his name. Zacchaeus, he said, quick, come down. I must be a guest in your home today. So Zacchaeus quickly climbed down, took Jesus to his house in great excitement and joy. But the people were displeased. So he publicly made this announcement. There's throngs of people, everyone. He looks up at Zacchaeus and he says, I'm coming to your house. Like, I'm coming over. And the people weren't happy. But the people were displeased. He has gone to be the guest of a notorious sinner, they grumbled. Meanwhile, Zacchaeus stood before the Lord and said, I will give half my wealth to the poor, Lord. And if I have cheated people on their taxes, I will give them back four times as much. And Jesus responded, salvation has come to this home today, for this man has shown himself to be a true son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save those who are lost. And what I love about this story and kind of what you need to know about Jesus is that he constantly defied the norms. He shocked. He just shocked people all around. He shocked the religious and the non-religious alike. So the quote-unquote good people were shocked by the fact that he befriended these people of questionable character. And he would actually talk to them and go up to them, and that was like a no-no in those days. And I think still today we struggle with that. And the bad people, on the other hand, were just as shocked when he looked their way and when he didn't judge them and when he treated them as equals and when he accepted them just as they were and even befriended him like Zacchaeus. He went down to their level and he befriended them. And so if you're taking notes today, the first thing I want you to know is that you are accepted. You are accepted. See, Zacchaeus was notorious, a notorious bad guy. And just to kind of give you a glimpse of what's going on, Zacchaeus, he's a tax collector. But he wasn't just a tax collector. He collected taxes for the Roman government, who was very, very hated. They came in, invaded lands, and they imposed their taxes on these people. And the people hated that. So they viewed Zacchaeus as a traitor just off the bat. And then second of all, worst of all, he didn't just collect taxes and give it to the Roman Empire and that was his job and he got his pay and that was that. No, he charged extra fees because he learned, oh, I can get rich off this. And so he embezzled funds from people. He cheated them. He was a thief, a notorious thief, and a very, very wealthy and successful one at it too. And so people despised him. In this community, they hated him for his dishonesty and for the way that he was. He'd turn his back on his own people. So at the time, it was unthinkable that Jesus, who's known for his goodness, would hang out with someone like Zacchaeus. Like, I'm going to come to your house. And it wasn't like Zacchaeus invited him over. He invited himself over. This was shocking for the people because most people shunned him, avoided him because they didn't want to be associated with him so that, you know, people might view him as like, if they hang out with him, that all of a sudden they're doing what he's doing, that kind of thing. Maybe some of you guys know about that. Oh, don't hang out with her. Yeah. But Jesus, he was unconcerned, completely unconcerned by the customs of the day. He didn't care. He didn't care about people's perceptions. All he saw was, there's this man, and that he needs me. And regardless of what people think about me, I want to get to know him. I'm going to make Zacchaeus my friend. And he came down and he did that day. As young children, I know I kind of go back to this because I'm into psychology, so I tend to talk about this a lot, but as young children, we're often taught that what we do is more important than who we are. And parents mean well. I kind of alluded to this already, but parents mean well, but a lot of times we create little moralizers, people that think, okay, if I just do X, Y, Z, then I will be a good girl or a good boy. And we somehow think that we can attain perfection or that our goodness and our works and our deeds will somehow make us good people. And we grow up thinking in these terms. And it's really difficult because the grace of God doesn't make sense to us. And we have a hard time grasping acceptance. Like the kind of acceptance that Zacchaeus experienced is the same one that God has for us. And we have a hard time with that. See, even after encountering Jesus, like many of us do or have, and maybe some of you haven't, but even after encountering Jesus, the one who knows all of our faults, all of our failures, all of our mistakes, and yet loves us and accepts us, after that, where we kind of get hung up is accepting ourselves. That's difficult. We don't really understand that Jesus wants to be friends with the real us, not the false us, not that persona that we put on in the morning and, ladies, we put on our makeup and all of a sudden we're like somebody else. Whatever it is for you, like you look in the mirror and you're like, okay, I get up and I got to push beside all the bad, the ugly, the hurt. People walk up to me, I'm going to smile. How was your day? Oh, it's fantastic. Everything's going great, right? This is what we do. And we learn to kind of put on this mask. But Jesus doesn't want to be friends with that person. He wants to be friends with the real you. With the hurting one, with the bad one, with the broken one, with the real. And what he really, I think that's what we really all want too. Like, if we think about it, what we really, really want is we want to know deeply and truly, and we want to be known for ourselves deeply, truly, on a real level. And for those of you that have been fortunate enough to have those kind of relationships with a human, obviously human, but with another human, it's healing. It's both healing and life-giving because this allows you the freedom to be yourself and to allow somebody to come in and to see the dark places and to experience acceptance in spite of that. And that is really, really powerful. The ability to be vulnerable and to be truly known is powerful. And I think if we think about it, we are most impacted by the relationships in our lives that go beyond the surface. They don't just stop there. It's not just like, hi, how are you, casual, but it goes deeper, and it begins to invade the dark places in our life. And it's also true that if you don't have those, the absence of those kind of relationships leaves us lonely and unfulfilled. We all desire this. And this can be hard, because while we want these relationships with other people, we want to be known, we want to know and to be known, at the same time, we don't. We're afraid. We're afraid of what will happen when people really, really find out who we are. And so sometimes we may find ourselves pushing people out and never allowing people to really, really come in and know us in a true way. We want to put up the mask because we're afraid what will happen when we tear off that mask and people start to see the real us. And we're afraid of rejection. And this may be really, really valid. Maybe we have had situations in our life where we exposed our faults and our secrets to somebody and they went and they blabbed. or maybe they shun us afterwards, or I don't know what it was for you, what your experience was, but a lot of times past relationships will leave wounds, they will leave deep cuts, hurts, scars. I know for myself, I have experiences of being in environments and around people or places that they weren't safe. And I couldn't be known. I could not allow myself to be known because I knew that I'd be taken advantage of. I would be hurt. Maybe some of you guys can relate to that. And even in the church, this is something that happens because there's a tendency towards people becoming harsh and judgmental. And even though that is so far from who Jesus is on a human level, sometimes that's what happens. That's the real. And I think that's why these healing relationships are so important, like being in these kind of healing relationships. Kind of what I'll just get a little vulnerable and real with you guys, share a little bit about my past. I've been in a church previously before we started Red Chapel where things weren't safe. I'll just be honest. If I went to the person next to me and I told them, you know what, I'm really struggling with X, Y, Z, there's some things that were okay, like I broke my leg. Oh yeah, we'll pray for you. But if I start saying, I'm really struggling in these other areas, like God forbid you're struggling with sin. Yeah, those kind of unsafe environments. And I found myself in that kind of place. And even with like the leadership in the church, like the pastor, I couldn't show him me. I was always taught, like, you know, whatever he says goes, and, you know, don't question the man of God, and, you know, even if it was, like, questionable, you didn't question it, and I was afraid, like, he would always be looking down on me, like, trying to find dirt or something like that, and that really was what was going on, and even though there was a lot of good qualities and a lot of good things, that particular portion taught me to be afraid, and to be afraid of God, because I viewed him as this dictator, as somebody up in heaven with a like fiery rod, and when I made a mistake, he was going to smite me down. And I lived in terror and fear for my salvation probably till about a decade ago. And that's why this particular piece is so, so important to me, because when I found grace, when I found that I don't have to shake at night under my pillow, like crying, like, God, please, you know, I made a mistake, but please accept me. God, I don't want to be lost. I don't want to offend you. I don't want to be at your wrath, you know, experience your wrath. Like, I had a desire to serve God, but I was terrified because I had this distorted view of who God was and of his grace and of his mercy. And kind of after coming out of that, I started to realize, oh, he accepts me in such freedom that I found in that, in his acceptance and in his love, as I begin to tear down those things and begin to experience him in a new way. And honestly, a big portion of that was coming into a new relationship with someone else. My husband and I, we have another pastor, and you guys have been fortunate. He's been here a few times, and you got to know him. And what that did for me was healing and restorative, because every time something would happen and we come into contact with him, I kept expecting him to respond in a certain way, to be harsh, to be judgmental, to be critical. And every time I expected that, I got the opposite. I'm like, what is going on? I make mistakes and it's okay. There's freedom. Like, what is this? Like, I had a hard time because I kept expecting to be like, oh, hit in essence. And I got into this new relationship where I really feel like it was the way Jesus would respond. He would look down and say, we read about it in the Bible, where he would reach down and he would say, you know what, you fell, but okay, get back up. You made a mistake, that's okay. I still love you and I still accept you. And I feel like as a church, this is a huge opportunity for us, because we have the opportunity to be the change. You know, Gandhi says, be the change you want to see in the world. I love those kind of quotes, but I really feel like that is true, because the way we respond to the people around us has huge implications for their life. We can impact and we can shape the way that they're viewing Jesus. We are his church, and as such, I know we're flawed and we're imperfect, and so not expecting that by any means, but the way we respond to people when they're hurt or when they make mistakes can be transformational, just like that one was with my own pastor. And I know within Red Chapel, this is something we really, really protect. We feel like we want to create a place where people can come in and to start to open up those wounds and to start to expose things about themselves and to feel like it's a place where it's safe and where they can come and they can actually make changes because they can actually deal with the pain inside and with the brokenness. And I think that that comes on all of us to protect as the church and as the people of Red Chapel, to protect that and to respond to people in a way to where they can come to God and they can experience him, where we're not hindering that. And I know I've gotten a lot of feedback over the years, like people saying, you know, that's who we are. And I feel like we're doing a really, really good job of that. But I think too, even as the church grows, there's always that tendency to go back because we're human. And it's not natural for us to show grace. It's not natural for us to love. It's not natural for us to be like Christ. Like we conquer something, we get a few steps ahead, and then all of a sudden we're the enlightened ones and we want to disperse our, you know, great knowledge on those behind us. And a lot of times that's unwelcome or it's hurtful. And I think we as a church, we can create a new relationship, a healing relationship, a restorative one for the people that come in here. And I know we do a good job of that, but I'm just going to get like just a little real with you guys. Sometimes this is something I struggle with. You may or may not know, it may be obvious, but I tend to be a little introverted. I'm not the most comfortable, like standing up here, not the most comfortable thing in the world for me. I've adapted, and God has called me to do things that, you know, maybe I wouldn't naturally do. If I had my way, I'd be sitting somewhere in a corner. I probably wouldn't talk to anybody. I'd walk in, and I walk out, and, you know, maybe smile at somebody, and that's it. That's my comfort zone. But God has called me to walk out of my comfort zone. He's like, no, you're going to get up here and you're going to do this. Okay. Which is actually a testament to him because I don't know. I couldn't do this on my own. But it's true. And not just that, like, even he's challenged me constantly that I want to be comfortable and it's uncomfortable for maybe me to talk to somebody that I don't know. But yet he's challenging me, like, rejection takes other forms. And in my not actively pursuing somebody, my not actively inviting someone in, isn't that by default rejection on some level? At least that's what I've been grappling with. And I'll be honest, that's something I struggle with and that I'm constantly trying to fight my own nature, my own desire to be comfortable, my own desire just to do, you know, what feels good to me and in my selfishness. And you see, I make great statements. I'll be like, you know, I'll tell my husband, I really go deep with people. Maybe I don't go wide, but I go deep. And that's a good thing. Like, I feel that's something I really do. I'm not afraid of the messy. I'm not afraid to get in with people. That part doesn't scare me, but it's the wide. It's the wide that I struggle with. And the problem is that sometimes I can use that as an excuse. Oh, well, I only want to have deep conversations, so I won't have those surface level conversations with people. That's hard. It's hard. So I can use these excuses and I can, you know, come up with these great reasons why I can only go deep with people and maybe not greet people on Sunday. So I just exposed myself. So take what you will with that. But by not actively accepting, you can reject. And the thing is that when people come in here, they have an opportunity, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to encounter Jesus Christ, the Savior, the one who loves them. And that's huge. You never know what could happen on just one Sunday, on just one regular Sunday that feels the same. Maybe you got up early, there was time change like today. But today, Jesus said, no, I came to encounter somebody. I came to change somebody's life. And that may be what's supposed to happen here today. You see, Zacchaeus, what I love, 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 love about the story is Zacchaeus meets Jesus. He invites him into his home, or Jesus invites himself into his home. He has one encounter. And you see from one verse to the next, you see how Zacchaeus turns from a thief, from a notorious sinner, to all of a sudden he's a philanthropist. Huge change. Broad. Oh, I'm going to sell like half of my wealth and I'm going to give it all to the poor. That's the kind of change that can happen when you encounter Jesus. And that's the kind of change that we can help create here in this environment, in this space, by creating safety so that people can encounter Jesus, so that people can change radically and dramatically. And you may be wondering here today, maybe you're like, okay, you're talking a lot about change and creating environment change, but what does that even look like, or how can I even be changed? And that's where I kind of want to go in my last point. I want to talk about being changed, or to be changed. And this begins with honesty. Change starts with honesty. Some of you may be pushing back at the idea of being lumped into the same quarters as Zacchaeus. I know I am. Like, oh, I'm far too enlightened. I'm far too good to be in the same place as Zacchaeus. And we tend to do that. As humans, we have badness skills. We have categories, and we have levels of what we think are bad, and what's acceptable, and what's unacceptable. And we kind of rate ourselves like, okay, I feel like I do this, and I don't do that. So therefore, I'm on this level. And that other person, they're doing that. Way down on the totem. We kind of do that. We kind of size each other up, and we kind of compare ourselves. And I think that in comparing ourselves, it kind of makes us feel better about the bad that we do, or the things that we see, or maybe our faults, or our mistakes, or our failures. And so we can kind of create some distance. But that is not the way that it really is in reality. We may compare ourselves to feel better, but that's not real. And life doesn't work that way. And in God's eyes, it's not that way. In God's eyes, mistake is a mistake is a mistake. I want to take you to Romans 3:23. This kind of really, really, really sets it home. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So maybe I'm not Zacchaeus. Maybe I'm not stealing from my neighbors. It's really easy to recognize, like, the murderer. They need Jesus. Sometimes it's hard for us to say, I need Jesus. And I think one of the greatest hindrances for people to receive grace of God is not scandalous sin, but it's their empty good deeds. It's that striving to achieve perfection that kind of gets in the way. For me, transformation begins when I can be honest and I can say, Jesus befriends the worst of sinners, so Jesus befriends me. And I may not be a murderer, but I am no less guilty. What God offers us is free of charge, and yet we find ourselves measuring our goodness and either becoming self-righteous and setting ourselves on a pedestal, like far away from the badness, looking on those behind us, just one step behind us, or it can take another form and we can become desperate. And we can think, you know, what I've done is too bad and there's no way that Jesus could possibly love me. I know, I hear what you're saying and it makes a lot of sense, but I just can't accept it. I just don't believe that Jesus could really want me, that he could really want to be my friend. We find ourselves like Zacchaeus. I'm sure he was very aware of the fact that Jesus was this good person, and that it kind of forced him to introspect and look at himself and be like, ugh, what have I done? Like, there's this huge gap between me and Jesus. There's a huge disparity. And I think that's kind of where he found himself. And I think that's kind of where we find ourselves too sometimes. We find ourselves thinking that we can't achieve Christ's love. But the thing is, you don't have to. It's free. It's free of charge. There are no strings attached. There's nothing that you have to do, and there's nothing that you can do to receive his grace. No matter where you are, what you've done, you need Jesus. I need Jesus. All of us fall short of deserving grace. Nothing we can do can earn it. It's all found in surrender. And sometimes this is the most difficult thing for us as humans to do, is to take our hands off the controls and to really to surrender, to really accept Jesus' free gift, his friendship. And we're constantly battling. We think, if I can just do this, if I can conquer this, or if I can get on this 12-step program to freedom, and in many contexts, that's fantastic. I'm a huge proponent of that. But in this situation, it's not helpful. There's only one step here. It's acceptance. That's it. And profoundly, it is acceptance that frees us to change. We can't will ourselves to be righteous, but when we accept Jesus, we allow the Holy Spirit to change, to transform us, just like Zacchaeus experienced. See, we're all drawn to Jesus. We want what he promises and what he has to offer. We're sometimes afraid to approach him. Like Zacchaeus, we hide in our tree, settling for just a glimpse of him, and the chance of maybe overhearing a few words, that's all we can expect of him. But instead, Jesus is here today. You may be Zacchaeus up on your little tree, and you may not be expecting much from him. But today, Jesus wants to invite himself into your home, into your life, into your dark places. He wants to invade those hidden spaces, those things that we hide, maybe from the world. Maybe nobody knows what those hidden spaces are, but Jesus wants to come in and to invite himself into that space. He wants to know you. To know you.
Thank you for listening to Red Chapel's podcast. It is our hope that you are inspired and motivated by the message that you have just heard. At Red Chapel, we are determined to create environments where people can experience life change. If you want to personally be part of that life change, submit a love offering at www.redchapel.org under the Donate tab. Your gift will change someone's life.